Well, let's take a look at what modern science can do for a growing problem worldwide, and that is blindness. Because as more people live for longer into old age, more of them are succumbing to sight problems, often because of disease processes affecting the retina, which is the patchwork of light-sensitive tissue which is at the back of the eye and has the job of converting light waves into brain waves and enabling us to see. If this gets damaged, though, it can't repair itself and we suffer sight loss. With us now is Oxford University's Robert McLaren, who's developed a prosthetic retina and he's got it into clinical trials. Robert, what does this thing look like if one looked at it?
Hello, Chris. We are working actually with the German engineering firm Retina Implant, and really I should say that the development of the technology is really something that's been ongoing with Retina Implant for the last 10 years, and we've really been working with them over the last 5 years in clinical trials in Oxford. And the purpose of the retina implant is to put at the back of the eye a light-sensitive array that is electronic rather than biological. So if I can explain it another way, the light-sensing cells known as photoreceptors gradually degenerate in diseases like age-related macular degeneration and retinitis pigmentosa. And the electronic retina is a device that is light sensitive, a bit like a bit like your mobile phone with a digital camera. It senses the images and then it stimulates the retina electronically in place of the photoreceptors.
The retina has multiple layers, and in one place are the photoreceptors, the rods and cones. They send electrical messages to cells further down the retina, which is what makes the optic nerve and sends these messages pinging off to the brain. So in the diseases that you're looking at, those rods and cones are gone, but the cells that make the optic nerve and can send messages to the brain, they still survive, and you're putting signals into those cells.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's absolutely correct. The pathology of retinitis pigmentosa is loss of one layer of the cells, the light-sensing cells. And of course, if someone's lost these cells, they are unable to perceive light at all, and they're completely blind. But the eye itself remains relatively intact. The eye looks normal. It moves around. It focuses the image. And most importantly, the optic nerve, which connects the eye to the brain, is also relatively normal. So the technology that we've been looking at with the electronic retina is really for patients with retinitis pigmentosa. It wouldn't, for instance, be suitable for patients who have a disease known as glaucoma, in which the nerve is damaged, or indeed if the eye had been lost through an injury or trauma.
How big is the device and how do you, as an ophthalmic surgeon, get it inside someone's eye?
It's approximately 3.5 by 4 millimetres in size, and that's the actual light sensing part, which has got 1600 pixels on it. There's a flat cable as well that connects it to a power supply, and the power supply is located under the skin behind the ear. And so there's a cable which goes underneath the skin across the side of the head under a muscle known as the temporalis muscle to connect it actually up to the power supply. So we have to slide it under the retina without damaging the retina, and we do that by sliding it through a very small slit in the wall of the eye. It is quite fiddly, I have to say. There's a lot of connections and things and placement to do, and it takes a long time to do that. But as ophthalmologists, we are quite used to working in small spaces, so it's relatively straightforward in terms of adapting the technology you already have.
And a person who has it implanted and then you switch it on, what is their experience?
Well, this is quite an amazing time for us all, actually, when we get someone who's been blind for maybe 10 or even more years who has no light perception to then sit there in that room when we activate the device for the first time, usually about 3 weeks after surgery, you know, enough time for things to heal up. And, you know, for them, it's a life-changing moment, and it's very exciting for us, everyone in the team who gets to know the patients well, and we're all very anxious until that final switch on takes place. And once the patient is able to see things, we know that the whole process has been a success.
Do they see colour, or at the moment are you just seeing spots of white light on a black background?
Yes, it's very much black and white. The light-sensing cells, photoreceptors, come in three colours, effectively red, green and blue, and they build up a coloured image. But that processing we don't currently have in the implant. It's really just on or off. I would make it's sort of similar to the very early television pictures, very grainy black and white image coming and going. It's certainly nothing that you would describe as being normal vision, but it's enough for these patients to get around and see things and have some independence.
Can they, for instance, recognise a face? Because people who have visual decrement say that they really struggle to see people's faces across the street. They can't read their favourite book. They can't watch their favourite television programme. What level of function do they get with this device?
Well, that's very interesting because, of course, the human brain is an amazing thing. And whilst patients wouldn't recognize a face on a still image, for instance, looking at a photograph, when the image is moving around, they get a lot more information out of it and they can see and recognize people by the way they move. And also, I know some of my patients have described being able to recognize different dogs, for instance, because, of course, a lot of blind patients have guide dogs. So, you know, there are cues there, but the moving image is really the most important, and that gives them the cues they need to recognize things in more detail than you would think based on the number of pixels.
It's amazing work. Thank you very much, Robert, for joining us to talk about it. That was Robert McLaren from the University of Oxford. And thank you to our other guests who were on the programme this week, Russ Angold, Simon Kay, and Joan Taylor.